So they said about the teacher. I thought it was only for teaching students, where they could be do the fizzle in there, but for any mitzvah.
For any mitzvah. Okay, so we are holding on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, 6-7 lines from the bottom. Okay, we're in the middle of discussing a braisa. Okay, so let's as follows. The Mishnah had mentioned a number of cases where a person eats something is chayav malchus. The first event was a person ate bikurim before the shukim were read on them. You bring bikurim to the Beis Mikdash, you're supposed to say the declaration, aram yoyved avi, etc. You didn't. Reb Shimon holds you would get malchus even if you're a kohen who was allowed to eat bikurim. You would get malchus for eating them before that kriya was done. So we discussed. We started discussing that Reb Shimon brings a braisa where he garshens a pasuk in Parashas Re'eh.
Yeah.
He garshens it from the end to the beginning, which we'll see why that's important later on. So we'll see why that's important later on in the Gemara.
He does a lot of times.
Not a lot of times, but he does that in this case.
How many times?
I don't know if there are any other times. Now, the point is, in this case, he garshens the pasuk going from the end to the beginning, where you have the pasuk says, "Lo'isucha lecho b'sharecha," you're not allowed to eat in your gates, meaning outside of a designated area. Masa begamah tiroish l'itaracha, the ma'aser ma'aser sheni, that is, of your grain, wine, and oil. U'chordes b'korcha b'tenecha, and the b'chordim of your cattle and your sheep. B'chol nedarecha asher tider, and all your nedarim which you vow. V'nid v'isecha, and all your nedavos. U'truma tirdecha, and the truma of your hand. So Reb Shimon goes through the pasuk phrase by phrase, going backwards, darshaning what each one is. We said that he started by saying, "Trumas yodcha means bikurim," and it can't just mean the pasuk is telling us you're not allowed to eat them outside of your shalayim, because we could learn that by a kavachomer from Meiser, madach Meiser sheni, which is less stringent. You can't eat it outside of your shalayim. How much more so bikurim, which can only be eaten by kohenim. Therefore, the pasuk must be teaching us that you have a different rule by bikurim. You can't eat them before the kriya. That you get malchus if you do. Then we said in a similar vein, Reb Shimon continued, that nidrei secha refers to a todo or shlomim, and it comes to teach us that if you eat the meat of them before the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach, you get malchus. The point being, Rashi says with a number of these things, we have elsewhere in the Torah, we have mitzvahs asay, that say that you're supposed to wait until the Zrikas Adam, for example, or some of the other examples that we're going to see. But Reb Shimon is pointing out that you have loisa says on them as well, based on this passage. We said that Bechoris refers to that Bechor, same thing, you could have learned it by a Kavachomer, therefore the Pasuk must mean that if you're a non-Kohen, if you're a Zohar, and you eat from it even after Zrika, you get Malchus. Again, we wouldn't otherwise know that from the Pesukim. We would know from the Pesukim elsewhere that there's a mitzvah say that a Bechor is to be eaten by Kohen. We wouldn't know that there's a mitzvah loisa there that a Zohar can get Malchus for it. So that's where we're at. In general, no. Well, that's what he was saying. That you have a kavachomer that would teach us that you can't eat them outside. That you can't eat them outside the chomer, because you could learn that as a kavachomer from meiser. Madach meiser, anybody can eat. How much more so b'chor, which only a kohen.
Malchus, can't you?
No, because if you didn't have a lav for it, you wouldn't have malchus. If all you have a mitzvah saseh, then you don't have malchus for a mitzvah saseh.
Right. So you have a lav for it.
So you have a lav for it, which tells you therefore that you get malchus.
So
Reb Shimon is learning that from this. Mentioned the Bechoris, and we don't need to be told that you're not allowed to eat a Bechor outside of your Shalayim because you can learn that by Kavachomer from Meiser Sheni. Therefore, it must be coming to teach us an extra case where you're chayev for eating a Bechor if you're a Zor, even if you're within the city. But the fact that you're a Zor puts it off limits to you. That's where we're up to, in the middle of that break. When we say in the Pasuk, your cattle and your sheep, that means a Chatas or an Asham. Which the Ritva says, the reason why, the logical thing to say that it means a chatas and an asham, is basically because we've covered most of the other karbonis. We're going to discuss an oilah soon, but we have to say, therefore, the pasuk is listing the various kinds of karbonis, it must somehow be referring to a chatas and asham as well. And again, Amr Reb Shimon ma'bazel alamdeinu. So again, Reb Shimon says, what is the pasuk coming to teach us? Im lo'oichon chut v'chomer, if it's telling you that you're not allowed to eat them outside the walls of your shalayim, a chatas or an asham, well, you don't need the pasuk. Kavachomer from Meiser. Again, you could learn it as a kavachomer from Meiser, where a chatas and an asham can only be eaten by kohenim, as opposed to Meiser. And ma'adach Meiser, you can't eat outside of your shalayim, how much more so a chatas or an asham? If you're telling us that the pasuk is teaching us that the kohen is not allowed to eat the meat of the chatas or the asham before the blood is sprinkled, then you don't need the pasuk to tell us that. You already said earlier in the pasuk we mentioned toda and shlomim. We mentioned the word v'nidvei secha, which we said referred to toda and shlomim, and we said that those you can't eat before the zrika. How much more so a chatas or an asham, which are kachim kachim. And if you're telling us that it teaches you that if you're a Zor, you're not allowed to eat them even after Zika, we should be able to learn that as a Kavachomer from Bechor, where again, Bechor is Kachim Kalim, and Chatas and Ashim are Kachim Kachim. No, what the Pasuk is teaching us is that the Chatas and Ashim, you have another rule. Even if it's after Zrika, and even if you're a Kohen, but if you eat it outside the Kloyim, meaning outside the walls of the Azara, then you also get Malchus, true Loika. That's an extra thing which we wouldn't have known by a Kavachomer from any. You can't use a Kavachomer for that. You don't have any previous carbon. You don't have any previous example of kodshe kodshim in the pasuk that you can only eat within the walls of the Azara. Again, you have in various places the Torah says a mitzvah saseh that they're supposed to be eaten in the walls of the Azara. But again, we wouldn't know that there's a lav that if you eat it outside the Azara, you get malchus, were it not for this pasuk. That's what Rav Shimon is saying. Then we continue. Going back to the previous thing in the pasuk. I shouldn't say we're doing them all backwards, actually. What we did is we started with Trumat Yodecha, Elo Bikurim, and then after that, then we went back to Nidvei Secha. After that, actually, we started going more in order. Bechoris, Bekarcha, Betzenecha, Bechol, Nederecha, Ashutider, are all in order. It's really only the first two, or the last two that are in the pasuk, Trumat Yodecha and Nidvei Secha, that Rav Shimon did out of order for reasons that we're going to discuss on our base. Okay.
They come at the end of the pasuk?
They come at the end of the pasuk, but Rav Shimon dashed them first. Okay, Nidrach Hazu Ayla, then we said, because the logical thing is usually, so we have there's two ways in which a person can declare a voluntary carbon. There can be a neder or there can be a nidah. So the Ritva points out, typically in Ayla, a person would declare as a neder, meaning that he declares on himself, I have an obligation to bring an Ayla. Later on, he'll pick one particular animal that he will use for that. But then if that animal gets lost or stolen or dies or develops a mum or what have you, it'll be on him. He'll still be on the hook to take another animal and use it for his obligation. As opposed to a todo or a shlomim, more typically a person would do benedava. One thing is because an adava, meaning that he designates achila, he says, I designate this particular animal as a toyo or a shlomim, and therefore if that animal is unavailable anymore, then he doesn't have to make up for it. The difference is in Ola, the Gemara tells us in Zvachim, one reason a person might, officially an Ola can be a carbon nadava, but one reason why a person might bring an Ola is to be machaper if he failed to do a mitzvah saseh, or if he had machshava zaris or whatever, so therefore a person feels a certain more obligation to bring it, as opposed to a toda or a shlomim, where just he's feeling happy, he's feeling thankful for the Eivishter or whatever, so therefore he decides on the spot, I'm going to take this particular animal and designate it as a carbon. So he could do it as a neder as well, but it's less likely.
But
he's not machoy. That's the difference between neder and neder. So in the derecha zuoy, the Amr of Shimon again, ma bozel labenu. What is the pasuk teaching us when it says you can't eat an oila in sharecha? Im la'ucham chut v'chayim la'kavachayim ma'iser. Does it mean you can't eat it outside the walls of your shalayim? You can make a kavachayim from ma'iser. Again, ma doch ma'iser, you can't eat outside the walls of your shalayim. How much more so an oila? If you're telling us the pasuk is teaching you that you're not allowed to eat, that you get malchus if you eat before the zrika, before the blood was sprinkled, kavachomer mitodo shlomim, we can learn that as kavachomer from toda and shlomim that we discussed before. If you're going to say it's after the zrika and you're a zar, then you can make a kavachomer from bechor, that ma becha bechor, how much more, which is kachim kalim, how much more so an oila is kachim kachim. Im chut v'kloyim kavachomer machatis v'ashem, and you're telling us that it means that if you eat it outside the walls of the azara, you get malchus. You can learn that as a kavachomer from chatas and asham. No, the pasuk is teaching us by the oila, there's yet another rule that doesn't apply to any of these previous korbanos. If you eat from it even after the zrika, even after the blood was sprinkled, and even if you're a kohen, and afilu b'fnim, and even if you're inside the azara, but because it's an oila, it's all supposed to be burnt on the mizbeach, true loika, then you would get mal. This again, if you eat from a korban oila,
5 years ago, right, after the Zika, everything should be good, except that it's an oil. That's what he's going to warm in there. So again, you have a mitzvah that says to burn it on the Mizeah, except for this pulpit, you wouldn't know that the mitzvah boy says there that you're not allowed to eat from it, and if you do, you get malchus. So that's all Rav Shimon's limud. That's the braisa where Rav Shimon goes through these various things and says that each of them we learn these details, we learn these lavim, and that you get malchus. So, Omer Roma, the Rava says an interesting expression like this. Do you live to ime, could Rav Shimon tailored, somebody whose mother gives birth, let her daven that she should have a child like Rav Shimon, and then it's worthy for her to give birth, the Eloi Loi Tailed. And if not, then she shouldn't give birth. It's a very strange expression.
Yeah,
so in fact, it's a very strange expression. And in fact, the Ritva takes out these last four words, the Eloi Loi Tailed, because he says, okay, look, obviously you should daven to have a son like Rav Shimon. Right. Doesn't mean that, if you don't have Rav Shimon, it's not worthy. I mean, there's many other levels below Rav Shimon. So there's a lot of explanation. There's a lot of explanations that different Achronim give on it.
Rav Shimon's father was Tam Chacham.
Rav Shimon's father, no, we don't know particularly that he was Tam Chacham, but we're saying that his mother apparently had some special chut. But what do we mean by the expression over here? Do you lid in the Rav Shimon tailored the Loiloi tailored? First of all, we got to ask. Rava is going to go on to say, well, that's the next words in the Gemara of Afagav de Islahu Pircha. Even though, actually, all of these lemudim of Rav Shimon's we could slog up, as the Gemara is going to proceed to say. So if we could slog them all up, why are we so impressed with Rav Shimon? So one explanation I heard is that Rava is going to show how they can all be slogged up. And the Gemara is going to ask in that case, then why is he so impressed with Rav Shimon? But so to start with, one idea is like this. All of these things that we're going to use to shlog up Rav Shimon's Lemudim, that we're going to use to shlog up his Kavachomer, are all fairly obvious things. Rav Shimon himself must have known of them as well. Yet, obviously, he didn't consider them to be valid Pirchas.
He still stuck to his guns and knew that his Lemudim are valid Lemudim. But Rava is very impressed, realizing, look at this, Rav Shimon must have realized some way to
shlog up these upshlogs, to be mafad of these Pirchas, even though I myself don't understand what it is. And to me, it seems the Kirchhoff are logical, but to Rav Shimon, obviously, they did not. So therefore, I'm very impressed by him that he reached such a level.
So what do we
mean by this expression, do you live in a Rav Shimon tailored, be loy loy tailored? So there's a few different approaches on it. The Gemara is going to talk about, again, we mentioned before that what Rav Shimon does is he darshins the pasuk out of order. He starts by darshining the last two things in it, and then he proceeds to darshin the rest. Now, we know there's a famous thing that the Gemara tells us in Nidah, Rashi brings it on Parshas Tazria, Isha Mazrach Tchila Yeledes Zachar, Isha Mazrach Tchila Yeledes Zachar, that if a man emits his Zera first, then it'll be a girl, and if a woman does first, then it'll be a boy. Meaning, in other words, that the order of things is significant, and that what comes last is the most significant. So therefore, the Aruch Haner says what Rava is effectively saying over here is you need to realize, look, Rav Shimon took the pasuk out of order and said the last thing in it is the most significant, comes first. You should realize, well, that's what you need in order to have a son in the first place. Otherwise, if you don't darshan and stuck him like that, then how do you have a son produced? The Aruch Haner says that. The Siach Yitzchak says a different part. He says, also based on a Gemara in Nidah, we know the Gemara explains in Nidah, and Rav Shimon himself actually explains over there, why is it a Yeledes, why is it a woman who gives birth has to bring a Korban Chatas? What does she do wrong? So the answer is, because when she's in the throes of giving birth, when she's in labor pain, she swears, I'm never going to have relations with my husband. Well, afterwards, she goes and has relations with him again. Therefore, she needs a chatas to be a chatas for that. So therefore, the Siach Yitzchak says, what Rava is saying is like this. Mela, if you had a child like Rav Shimon, sure, it's worth then again breaking your implied shvuah over there and going and having relations with your husband again in order that you can have more children of that caliber. But if your son didn't end up being of the caliber of Rav Shimon, why are you bothering to, you might as well keep your shvuah. Loy Taylor, then you might as well keep your shvuah and not have any more children. That's it.
By the way, it's not a valid neder that she makes.
No, it's not really a valid neder, of course not. It's not her oil, but her chatas. No, but it's symbolically of the idea. But the point is, so that's another explanation. And then there's a variety of other explanations along the lines of that Rav Shimon's chus helps not the Yelida Imikud of Shimon tailored that the child should be like Rav Shimon, but only if you have the chus of Rav Shimon on your side are you going to be zoicha to have children. If not, you may not be zoicha. Okay. Anyway.
But Afagab de Islahu Pircha. So Rava says, even though actually I can slug up all of these kalvachomers of Rav Shimon. Because let's start from the beginning. My chumer de bikurim in Meiser. Would you argue that bikurim is stronger than Meiser? And therefore, once we know you can't eat Meiser outside your Shalayim, automatically we know you can't eat bikurim outside your Shalayim. Who says? You're arguing shekein asurim lazorim. You're arguing bikurim are stronger because they're also to zorim. They're also to non-kayanim. Well, adirama meiser chomer. On the other hand, you can argue that meiser is more stringent. Shekein also lo'onin, because meiser sheni is not allowed to be eaten by an onin, whereas bikurim are. If the kayan is
a stringency.
No, what do you mean a less stringency? The fact is, you have a stringency in meiser that you don't have in bechor. Meiser sheni, you're not allowed to, an onin is not allowed to eat. Bechor, a kayan is an onin, is allowed to eat it. So therefore, you could argue then that no, if you the fact that the Torah tells us that Meiser has to be eaten within the walls of your Shalayim, maybe that wouldn't apply to Bechor. Maybe you actually need the public place to
halakha.
Right, because
it,
only by Meiser, only by Meiser Sheni and Korban does the public spell out and say and say that that they can't be eaten by Yonanim.
Oh.
But by the Bechor, if the Bechor is not even brought to the carbon, if it's a Baal Mum, then yeah.
So we
slug
the first one.
And my chumer de Todo Shlomim Meiser Shkain Tumin Matam Domim Ve'emurim Lagavim Mizbeach. And next you're going to argue that Todo and Shlomim, Yud of Shimon was saying Todo and Shlomim are stronger than Meiser. Therefore, again, if we know that Meiser has to be eaten within Yerushalayim, how much more so Todo and Shlomim? Your argument is Shkain Tumin Matam Domim Ve'emurim Lagavim Mizbeach. Your argument is because, unlike Meiser Sheni, a Toda and a Shlomim have their blood and their Emurim placed on the Mizbeach, which Meiser doesn't. Adrava Meiser Chomer. On the other hand, you can argue Meiser is more stringent than them. Shekein Tumin and Kesef Tzura. Because Meiser Sheni, if you want to redeem it, you need to actually redeem it with coins that have an image stamped on them, as opposed to other kachim. If they develop a mum, you can be part of them for anything that has a value. You can be part of them with a piece of silver or whatever, as opposed to meiser, you need an actual coin. So therefore, there's a stringency in meiser that doesn't apply to
Torah.
Why do you need a face?
Because the Torah says the tzarta kesef yodcha, the tzarta moshon
sura.
That's
the prophet.
Yes.
That's why meiser
has to be kesef sura. Umay chumer de bechor mitodo shlomim. Furthermore, what are you going to argue the chumra is of a bechor over Torah and Shlomim? You're going to argue that a bechor is kaddish from when it's born, as opposed to a Torah and Shlomim, which only develop their kedusha later when you designate them. Adrabah, Torah and Shlomim chamurim. On the other hand, you can argue that a Torah and a Shlomim are more stringent. She can't turn in smicho nesachem or tenuchas chaz of a shay, because they have certain dinim that don't apply to a bechor. You need to lean your hands on the korban before it's shechted, which doesn't apply to a bechor. You need to bring nesachem with it, the flour and wine and oil. You need to wave the chaz and shay. None of those things apply to a bechor.
So Rabbi Shimon knew that.
Furthermore, what are you arguing that a chatas and an asham are stronger than a bechor? She can't kodshim kodshim, because a chatas and an asham are kodshim kodshim, as opposed to a bechor is kodshim kalim. Adrab a bechor chomer. On the other hand, shouldn't you be able to argue that a bechor is more stringent? She can't kodesh asham erechem, because we just said a bechor is kodesh from the womb, as opposed to a chatas and asham. And my chumer de oila mechatas v'asham. What are you going to argue that an oila is stronger than a chatas or an asham? She can't kolo, because it's completely burnt on the mizbeach. Adrav, a chatas
v'asham.
That's the fact that it's not, that none of it is even eaten. The fact is that all of it has to be burnt on the mizbeach. That's the chumer. Adrav, a chatas v'asham, chamiri. On the other hand, you should argue that a chatas and an asham are stronger. She can't mechafri, because after all, they're mechafer. An oila can be mechafer. An oila, as we said before, can be mechafer on mitzvah or on machshav v'zoros or whatever. We're winning for it. An oila is a korban that's burnt completely on the mizbeach.
Right.
A person can do it completely voluntarily. A person can wake up one morning and decide, I'm trying to explain.
A person can bring it purely as a neder and a dover. He just wakes up one morning and decides he wants to bring an oila. Or a person can bring it. It can be a kapara, for example, for having failed to do a mitzvah say, or for having mashavas zaret. However, that's not its primary purpose. As opposed to a chatas and an asham, the primary, the exclusive purpose of them really is to be mechaper for an avera that a person did. Therefore, in that sense, they have a stringency that an oila doesn't.
An oila is because of mashava.
It could be, but it doesn't have to.
Why are they bringing an oila for?
I just said a person could bring an oila because of that, but a person doesn't have to. A person could bring an oila for no reason at all. And the kulu chamirim oila. Furthermore, we can point out all the various other korbanos and things that we're discussing in a way are more stringent than oila. The isvo shtei achilas, because each one of them, well, not ma'ase sheni, but all the other korbanos that we were dealing with have those two achilas. Some of it is eaten by the mizbeach, is consumed on the mizbeach. Some of it is eaten by people, the kohenim and the kohenim and or the owners. As opposed to an oila, which is all burnt on the mizbeach. Now, the ritva explains. We just said that an oila is more chomer because kolil. On the other hand, though, this last argument that we're mentioning over here, kulu chamirim oila, is not really so much a chomerah. It's really more to say, look, the pasuk is telling us where you're allowed and not allowed to eat things. Isn't it more logical, therefore, that the pasuk is teaching us about where you're not allowed to eat the various korbanos that can be eaten? Why should we assume, therefore, it's more logical to say each one of them is telling us you're not allowed to eat it outside the walls of Yerushalayim or outside the walls of the Azara, as the case may be. We shouldn't assume that we're going to learn something about eating an oila after Zrika, where when you get down to it, an oila is not meant to be eaten at all.
So, in
other words, the reasoning is that we should say the pasuk is telling us where you're allowed to eat things. So therefore, it's more logical that the pasuk applies to korbanos that are meant to be eaten, that part of them is eaten by people, and it's telling us where not to eat them, as opposed to without getting into before zrika and after zrika and zorim and not zorim or whatever. Just the fact that we need to know where they should be eaten, as opposed to an oila, which is not eaten at all. So, we slugged up all of Reb Shimon's logic. El amayd yelida imik Reb Shimon, in that case, and why is Rav saying the expression of how overawed he is by Reb Shimon, why a woman should give birth to a child like Reb Shimon. The reason is, el amayd sevira leilidi day, because according to Reb Shimon's own svara, that he finds one thing to be chomer and another to be more chomer than the other. Misaris le krav darish le. What he does is he turns around the pasuk and darshens it in that order. Meaning, in other words, he had to do it that way. If he had done it in order, if he had done it in the order in which the pasuk says, where after ma'isa begun chatira shavitaracha, after ma'isa the next one is bechor, what is he going to say? What is the pasuk teaching you? That you're not allowed to eat a bechor outside your shalayim? We have a kavachomer from Meiser. Is it that you're not allowed to eat a poor zrika, kavachomer from Torah and Shlomim? What do you mean kavachomer from Torah and Shlomim? We haven't learned Torah and Shlomim yet. Only by doing Trumas Yodecha, which is Bikurim, and Nidvaisecha, which is Torah and Shlomim, only by doing them first is he then able to make this whole chain work, because then we already established what has to be done with Bikurim and what has to be done with the Torah and Shlomim, and then we can use it as a basis for the next one.
So he has
to darshan the pasuk out of order.
Okay,
and in fact, Tosfos points out there's a reason that brought Reb Shimon to do that.
What we just said explains how he darshan what he did. He had to take the pasuk out of order. But what forces him to take the pasuk out of order in the first place?
Let him just say the pasuk is in order, and we learn therefore that it's teaching us that bikurim are not allowed to, that bechoros are not allowed to be eaten outside the wall, and that toda and shlomim are not allowed to be eaten outside the wall, and oila is not allowed to be eaten outside the wall, etc. Why does he have to? What forces him to take it out of order? The reason is Tosfos says because if the pasuk just wanted to tell us
that a bechor if the bechor can't be telling us just that you're not allowed to eat it before zrika,
before the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach, we could have learned that from Toda, even though Toda says at the end of the pasuk we would have been able to learn bechor, because eventually we would have had, in other words, there's not just a question what order the things in the pasuk are, what had to be listed in the pasuk bechlal. Once we have Toda later on in the pasuk, we would have been able to learn bechor from it. Just like a toda, you're not allowed to eat before the zrikas are done, so also bechor.
So why does the pasuk mention bechor at all? Evidently, it must be because we want to learn something. From bechor that then can be used for all the other ones,
and that forms the basis of his limud over here.
Okay. So therefore, that the very fact that it says b'chor forced him to say that the word b'chor, the b'chor in the pasuk must be there for some kind of limud, and the only way to make the limud work, therefore, is to darshan the pasuk out of order, to darshan b'chor, to darshan todah and shlamim before we get to the other one.
And what we want to learn from them is.
So that's what we learn. In other words, is that each of them, there's a lav involved, there's a unique lav that involves. That applies to that particular kind of carbon, whether it's that you can't eat it outside the wall of your shalayim, whether it's that you can't eat it before zrika, whether it's that you can't eat it if you're a zor, etc. Yeah. Okay.
That's not such a big...
No, but it is. It's just to realize, to notice that nuance of the process, and therefore to understand how to darshan it. Yeah. Okay. So now, the question is, okay, so you're telling me, therefore, that we are using, you're telling me that we would have used this chain of Kal V'Chomer, and therefore, instead of using each thing we can learn from a Kal V'Chomer. We can learn, for example, that each of these karbanos you can't eat outside the wall of your shalayim, and instead we say, since you don't need that, because you can learn each one with a Kal V'Chomer, instead we're saying we're learning a different din for each one. The question is, how can you make an azhara based on a Kal V'Chomer? Let's say, for example, so you're telling me, let's say, for example, that a b'chor, you're not allowed to eat that. How do you know that you're not allowed to eat a b'chor outside the walls of your shalayim because of a Kal V'Chomer from Meister? What do you mean you can't eat an azhara? You can't create a lav out of a Kal V'Chomer. There has to say someplace in the pasuk. There has to be someplace in the pasuk where it says in so many words, don't eat the b'chor outside the.
Maybe there is.
Well, then the question is, even according to the opinion that says that you could punish based on a Kal V'Chomer, which we discussed a few blocks ago in connection with a Chosoi, we said over there that Rabbi Yitzchak had said that once the Pasuk tells us you're not allowed to have relations with your sister from your father's side, and you're not allowed to have relations with your sister from your mother's side, how much more so if she's your full sister, from both your father and your mother. So Rabbi Yitzchak holds Onshin Min Adin. But even he agrees that as far as an azhara, it needs to be spelled out in so many words in the pasuk. So how are we trying to learn over here? How are we trying to learn over here? Lavim and Malchus from a Kal V'Chomer.
Okay.
The answer is Isura Ba'alma. The answer is what Reb Shimon is saying when he says there's an azhara for each one of them. He means there's an isur involved in each one of them. Not necessarily does it mean that you would get Malchus. It's true, you can't give Malchus unless you have, without an Azhara that comes from an explicit pasuk. But to say that they're also that you could do, given that we have S's elsewhere in the Torah for each one of these things, all the pasuk is coming to tell us is you should know there's not only an essay involved for each one, there's also a Lois essay involved for each one. But not that you would actually get Malchus on it, because the fact of the matter is you didn't have a proper Azhara. No, it just means that you have a lav, but without Malchus. Tosfos, however, has a very long discussion. You see a Tosfos over here that begins over here on Yud-Zayin and continues through most of the Chesam and Aleph. And Tosfos has a number of problems with that explanation. And besides Hadvarim, I mean, like I say, it's a long Tosfos. They talk about a lot of different angles on it. But they end up saying one thing they mention is the shitta of the Ri, that no, what the Gemara means when it says Isura Ba'alma is that at least some of these things that we're discussing, maybe not every single one will be Malchus, but some of them at least are indeed going to involve Malchus. When we say Isura Ba'alma, we mean some of them are going to be only an Isur without Malchus. Others of them are going to be an Isur involving Malchus.
Which one?
So, for example, that we say that to not eat them outside the wall of your shalayim, that will involve Malchus.
But the ones, for example, to eat before Zrika or Zara or whatever, not necessarily.
Okay. Question is, Omar Rava, but didn't Rava say, Zorisha Ochman Ola with Zrika Fuswa Koba?
If a Zara eats meat from a Koban Ola before the blood was sprinkled and it's outside the wall of the Azara, Lurub Shimon like a Chomish. According to Reb Shimon, he would get five Malchus. Because we have, he's a Zor. Number one, that he's a Zor. Number two, it was an Ola. Number three, it was before Zrika. Number four was outside the wall.
Number four was outside the Kloim, outside the wall of the Azara. And number five, it was outside the wall of Yerushalayim. So therefore, five.
Because anyway, it's not going to be a mark here.
So that's, we're going to get to that later in the Gemara. The question of whether it be right now we're assuming according to the Shimon, each of these things is a separate Isser and a separate Malchus.
Okay.
And we say Loika Chomish. And the question is also, a Tana might be saying something and not make himself so clear. Rav Shimon might be saying that each one of these things that each one of these things is an Isser without spelling out. Does he mean that it's an Isser that would involve Malchus, or does he just mean an Isser as in you've been over on a lot? Rava being an Amorah, when he says Loika Chomish on the face of it, he has to mean that he actually gets five times Malchus. But how does that work? The answer is Chamisha Isurim. If we're saying that Ein Mazhirin Min Adin, if we're saying that you can't make an Azhara based on a Kama Chomer, the answer is Chamisha Isurim, Abu. Fine, but even Rava doesn't mean that there's five Malchus. He means you're over on five Isurim, which therefore Loika actually can mean over here, unlike usually where Loika means you get Malchus in based in Shomata, it can mean you get Pech from based in Shomaila. You get punished by based in Shomaila because you were over on five Lavas.
But we don't know.
Not necessarily doesn't mean that you would get Malchus on them down here on earth. Again, according to Rashi, none of them. And according to Tosfos, maybe some of them. Okay, the question is, okay, but our Mishnah had said, Elohein Aloikin, the following people get Malchus, and it mentioned a person who eats Bikurim before the Kriya, and somebody who eats Kodshim outside the Kloyim. According to what you're explaining, according to Reb Shimon, at least some of these things are not going to be Chayav Malchus. It's only going to be an Isur of Alma. Now, the answer is Ela Kro Yaserohu. No, rather we have a different answer. We're not going to say that. Well, that's the question. In other words, if we're saying that we're learning these Isurim of eating a Chut B'Kloim or Chut B'Chomer or whatnot by a Kavachomer, you can't do that. Ein Mazirim Minadin. Ela Kro Yaserohu. No, what we're going to answer is as follows. This that we're saying, this pasuk that we quoted before, Lo Yisur Halecha B'Sharecha. Don't say that the pasuk is teaching us. What were we doing? What was Rav Shimon doing in the Braisa? Saying each one of them, we have an Isser that we could learn with a Kal V'Chomer. Therefore, the pasuk is not telling us that Isser, but rather a different one that we wouldn't have otherwise known without the Kal V'Chomer, that we wouldn't have otherwise known because we don't have a Kal V'Chomer for it. No, we have to take a different angle on it. The whole pasuk really is unnecessary. Mechti, because let's consider. Ksiv, a few psukim earlier, it says, Vavesa Shom, Vachalta Lufnei Hashem, Lekecha Bamokam Begemer. That's not actually how the pasuk goes. Vavesim Shom, Vachalta Mishom, whatever. It's two psukim back to back that say that you have to bring all your kabonas to the Beis Mikdash, to Yerushalayim, and eat them there. So therefore, Lichte Rachman Aloy Sucha La'Ochlam, therefore, all the pasuk had to do is say, after that, you're not allowed to eat them. Them meaning collectively all of the korbanos that were mentioned in the previous pasuk. Okay, so like this, the pasuk that we quoted before that Reb Shimon was quoting in his braisa, Lo Yisur Halecha B'Sharecha, is pasuk Yud Zayin in Perek Yud Beis of Rei. Pasuk Vav in that same perek also lists all these korbanos. Va'aveisim shama olei seichem v'zivchechem ve'es masre seichem ve'es trumas yedchem v'nidreichem v'nidveseichem u'choras v'kayachem v'tzarinchem. So all of them are listed already. So why in Pasuk Yud Zayin does it have to relist all of them again? All it had to say, if it wanted to say that the loisa say involved, it should say that you're not allowed to eat any of them outside of Yerushalayim. All it had to say is don't eat them. And Rashi goes on to explain, it wouldn't even be considered a lav shebeklolus. You wouldn't even say, we have a rule that you don't get malchus for a lav shebeklolus, for a lav that includes many different details. But here that wouldn't be that, because since this loy sucha lo'ichlam would be referring back to that list, 11 psukim earlier, then it wouldn't be considered a lav shebeklolus. A lav shebeklolus means when you have one lav that includes many different details. For example, Rashi gives one example that, let's say, for example, the Torah tells us you're only allowed to eat the Korban Pesach roasted. You're not allowed to eat from it raw or half-cooked or whatever, or boiled in water, only tzliyesh. That is called a lav shebeklolus, because we have one lav where it says loy soichlu that includes different details, half-cooked, cooked in water, half-roasted, cooked in water, whatever. As opposed to over here, if you have, the pasuk says, Lo Yisucha La'Ochlam, if it had said, you're not allowed to eat them, then the them would be referring back to all the korbanos we mentioned before, and it would be considered a separate lav for each one of them. We would say you'd get a separate lav, therefore, for eating an Ola outside the Azara, and for eating a Shlomim outside Yerushalayim, and for what?
If we said
Lo Yisucha La'Ochlam. Neheder Mefarish Bohu Rachmana Lamali. So why does the Pasuk have to relist each one of them individually? Obviously, what the Pasuk wants to do is tell us that there is an individual lav, and therefore an individual malchus, for each one individually. So therefore, when Rava says, that loike chomish, he can actually mean that you actually do get so again, according to Rashi, it still means that we would say that you have five isurim, not necessarily five malchus. When our Mishnah had mentioned, for example, that you get malchus for eating kodshim outside the kloyim, that would not be based on this pasuk, but rather based on something else that the Gemara is going to quote soon, a different lav. So Rava himself can still be saying, from this pasuk we learn that if a zora eats from an oilo before zrika, etc., then he's over on five isurim. We still don't know necessarily that all five of them involve malchus. Some of them might, based on other psukim. From this pasuk alone, all we know is that each one of them has a separate issur. According to Tosfos' understanding, what the Gemara is saying at this point is that no, what we mean is, once we have the fact that we didn't need the pasuk at all, and instead we have the pasuk and it lists them out individually, it really means that each one of them is chayav malchus just on those grounds alone.
Because it's cited individually where it didn't need to because we had them 11 psukim earlier.
Yeah. Okay.
So who says that?
And the Rambam says similarly. The Rambam says, for example, that this is Zorisha Ochman Oila, etc. When we say that he gets it means that he gets five malchus. Okay. So that's what it means. It means to teach us that there is indeed an individual lav for each one.
Everybody agrees on that.
No, well, that's what we're saying now. Given that we're not learning from a Kavach Chayim, but we're learning from the fact that we have an extra process that wasn't even necessary. And therefore, it must be teaching us that there were individual lavim for each one, and therefore, that's it. We're not learning anything minagim.
Okay.
Gufa. Now, getting back to what we said that Omar Rav, a Zor Sha'ochman Oila lifnei Zrika chutz l'chayim, we said that if a Zor eats from an Oila before Zrika, outside the walls of Yerushalayim, the Rav Shimon like a Chomish, we said according to Rav Shimon, he would get five malchus, because each one of them is a separate Isser of its own.
Right.
And again, we said maybe loike doesn't mean malchus, maybe it just means isurim. The point is, whatever. Now we're going to talk about why dafka five. The loki nami mishum v'zor lo yechol ki kodeshem. Why doesn't he get another malchus on the grounds that you have the pasuk says that a zor should not eat from the korbanos because they are kodesh, implying that a zor is not allowed to eat from any kodshim, an oilo is kodshim. So therefore, aside from we said that Shimon had learned from his pasuk that when it says that when it says b'chol nederecha asher tidur refers to a korban oila, and it teaches us that you're not allowed to eat it, that if you're a zor you're not allowed to eat from it. But we have a different pasuk that also says that a zor is not allowed to eat from it. So you should get malchus for that also, for it to be a separate issur as well.
You wouldn't have twice malchus for the same avera.
Well, according to Rashi and most other Rishonim, you might. We talked yesterday about the Potitza and the ant and whatever, where according to Rashi, and then most of the Rishonim agree with him, that yes, if the Torah repeats an Issur more than once, you can get Malchus for it more than once. According to the Rambam, not. According to the Rambam, we said the point is the Potitza was in four different categories of Issur, and an ant was in five, and so forth. So yeah, the Rambam would have to understand this over here also, that we don't mean that it's just repeated. Rashi would say that just the fact that it's repeated twice is enough to give you twice malchus, yeah. Again, Rashi himself doesn't hold over here that most of the Rishonim say that way. Again, over here, Rashi says that that you're not getting malchus on all of these anyway. But whatever, anyway. Okay, so why don't we have an extra Isser because of the Zor Lo Yechol Ki Kodeshim? The answer is Hanimi Lehechad of a Kodeshim Kazi. Yes, but that Isser only applies when at a point at which the Korban is suitable to be eaten by Kohenim. Hachar to the Kohenim Nami Lechazi. Here it's not suitable for the Kohenim either because it's an Ola. It's not meant to be eaten by anybody. Therefore, V'zor lo yechol ki kodeshem does not apply to that. V'zor lo yechol ki kodeshem means you have a korban which is supposed to be eaten by the Kohenim. You, a Zor, shouldn't eat from it. An Ola is not meant to be eaten by the Kohenim. Therefore, it doesn't apply. Okay.
And therefore?
So therefore, that's it. You can't count that one. So you're back to five. You're back to five, which are the five Yisurim that we learned from the so-called Lechol B'Sharach. This would have been a sixth one, but it doesn't work. Veluki nami mishum avos basada treifel oisichelu. How about we should find another malchus for him for the fact that the pasuk says, don't eat meat which is treifer in the field. And besides the simple meaning that it means that you, which is where we learn the concept of treifus, aside from that, we have another explanation of it. Kivin sheyata bata chutzlim chitzasay. Once meat
goes out of the mechitza of the boundary in which it's supposed to be
nesar, then it becomes aser. And there are, by the way, there are a few different. No, well, in this case, it means Yerushalayim or the Azara, as the case may be.
Right.
But it has other implications as well. For example, the Gemara talks about in Cholid, if you have a pregnant animal where the baby sticks out a limb before it was born,
right.
And then and then the mother animal is shefted, or actually even if not the mother animal is shefted at that point, whatever,
that limb becomes awful because it went out of Mechitza, it went out of its proper domain. This limb itself is awful. So on the same logic over here then, if you have... So the oil over here was taken out of your Yerushalayim, it was taken out of its boundary, wanted to get malchus for that reason alone. Yeah. And Tosfos again asks the question, why do we think you should get malchus for it if it is a lob of clothes on the face of it? Well, both of us are the safe of a Zechel, includes several different things. It includes several different Yisurim.
And the answer is because so it includes this idea of bottom and a high, and this idea of the fetus sticking out a limb, and includes this idea of carbonus being taken outside of their designated zone, etc. So the answer is Tosfos says that it's basically the idea is anything that goes out of its proper place. Well, the going out of its proper place is a generic term that happens to have a few different details under it. So it's not a lobster but clothes. Okay. Anyway, so why don't you get malchus for that also? The answer is, again, hanimila hech de b'fnim chazi. Again, that would only apply where, when it was inside its proper zone, it would have been mutar to eat. Hacha de b'fnim nami lechazi. Here, it's an oila. It wasn't suitable to eat when it was inside its zone, when it was inside the ezor either.
Yeah.
It's an oila. Yeah. Same thing. Okay. What about another one? Diluki nami kedir Rabbi Eliezer. Why don't we say we should give him malchus on the basis of what Rabbi Eliezer says? The Amar Rabbi Eliezer. When the Pasuk says, Lo ye ochel ki kodeshu, when the Pasuk says, in connection with the Karbonos of Miluim, it says they should not be eaten because it should not be eaten because it is holy, or Kodesh Haim, really, whatever, which teaches us, Kol Shav HaKodesh Pasul, whenever you have an item of Kodeshim that is Pasul,
right.
For example, in that case, the context is talking about Noisir. But more generally, any kind of kodshim that became posel, bar kodshim with loisef ala chalasa. Torah is adding that you have a loisef, so you're not allowed to eat it. So the same way as you have a loisef, say not to eat noisef, for example, because it's posel, the same way any other psul that would happen to it would prevent you from eating it. So therefore, again, you have the ola was taken out of here outside the azara. It became posel thereby. So you should have another loisef, so you're not allowed to eat it.
And therefore?
But why didn't Rava list that? The answer is again, again, that would only apply where before it became possible it would have been suitable to eat. Here, before it was possible, it wasn't suitable to eat either, again, because it's an oil. So all the things that we learn from none of those require that it had to be able to be eaten beforehand. When we said at the end over there that we learned that an oila has to be inside the azara, it has to not be eaten by azara, it has to be not before zrika, etc. So all of those things apply whether it was suitable to eat beforehand or not. They can all apply to an oila. It's an oila, it's not suitable. But the pasuk mentioned over there, behold the recha shetidur, which Reb Shimon explained, referred to an oila. Therefore, we know they can all apply to an oila. All these other pesukim that we're bringing, the zor lo yoichal, and Vosavos of the Trefa, etc., all of those are meant to only apply to a carbon that otherwise would have been kosher, and now to eat, and now became possible.
Because you're
right. Okay. Fine. What about another one? The Luki Namiki Idah said Rabbi Eliezer. Fine. But we have yet another reason we should give a malchus on the basis of another statement of Rabbi Eliezer. Netanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Kol Shuru B'Kololtia, anything which the Torah tells us has to be completely burnt on the Mizeach, then the Torah says don't eat it, which teaches us that you have an iser loisah set for eating it. So for example, anything that was supposed to be burnt on the mizbeach completely. So one example. So the prototype of it is by a kolin mincha of a kohen. The pasuk tells us in parashat Tzav, b'chol minchas kohen kol tia loisah. Any mincha brought by any kohen mincha brought by a kohen is completely burnt on the mizbeach. It should not be.
Right.
Rabbi Eliezer explains that gives us a prototype, that we learn a binyan av from that.
Right.
Anything else which is completely burnt on the mizbeach is not to be eaten. There's a loisa there not to eat it. So it applies to a mincha of a koyin, it applies to an oila, anything else that's supposed to be completely burnt on the mizbeach. So by that logic over here also, you have an O, you have that issue applies to an Ola. And you can't say, like we have said by the other ones, that it applies only to things that are meant to be a Kohen's Mincha is not meant to be eaten. It is Kohl's Seder. An Ola is the same thing. The answer is Enoch Hanami. And therefore you should have a sixth year, so you should have a sixth issue that you're over. Since with Enoch Hanami, the six, the five that we had that we learned from Moshe Halakha B'Shara, and this one would be the six. The answer is Enoch Hanami. You're right.
Yeah.
In principle, you should have a six. The Rava Mehai Kriyachama. When Rava says that you have five Isurim or five Malkas, he means that you learn from the pasuk Moshe Halakha B'Shara. He's not excluding ones that you could learn from other psukim. In this case, you're learning from a different pasuk called Tiyalayz Alcha. Fine. Very well, he has another Isser. He may even have another Malchus for that. But we're not counting that because it doesn't come from the Pasuk Lo Yisilcha Lecha B'Sharecha. Rava's point was, according to Rav Shimon's understanding of Lo Yisilcha Lecha B'Sharecha, you will have five Isserim and maybe up to five Malchus based on that one Pasuk alone. Yeah. Fine. More dinim about eating Korbanus before Zvika. Amar of Gidu Amar Rav. And we have a Simon Kuza, which stands for Koyin and Zor, basically. Koyin she'ochol mechatas v'oshom l'tnei zrika. If a Koyin eats mechatas or an oshom, till now we were talking about an oila. Now we're going to talk about a chatas or an oshom. If a Koyin eats mechatas or an oshom l'tnei zrika before the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach, loike, then he gets malchus. Do we know that? I mean, Reb Shimon, when Reb Shimon went through his braisa before, he mentioned that the limud for chatas or an asham was that if you eat from them outside the kloyim, we said it's true you're not allowed to eat from them before zrika, but we know that by a kavachomer from Torah and Shlom. What we said before, you can't create lavim based on kavachomers. So therefore, when we're saying over here that if he eats machatas or an ashram before zrika, he gets malchus, there must be a different source for it. We can't be using the pasuk lo yisilcha. Yeah.
Except the one in the mandama does
not. No, we said nobody. No, onshim adin. Yes, but not mazhirim adin. He said he can't create an azhar. Yeah. Okay. The reason is like this. And besides, anyway, all of that was only according to Reb Shimon. The chachamim don't necessarily agree with Reb Shimon's drasha on the pasuk. My timer, what is the reason? Why should the Kohen get Malkus? The Pasuk says that they should eat the Korbanus through which Kapara was accomplished. Kapara, when it comes to Korbanus, refers to the sprinkling of the blood on the Mizbeach. That is the Kapara. So yeah, Ashakub Abraham means that it was sprinkled. Meaning la'acha kapara ein. So therefore, the implication is you're only allowed to eat them after Kapara. Lifne kapara loy. You're not allowed to eat from them before Kapara. And Rav Gidol Amar Rav is saying lav habama kal esse lavu. Like this, when you have a lav, like this, when you have an esse from which you can deduce a lav, then that is considered, that has the force of a lav. Like this, the pasuk is not saying in so many words, don't eat from it before Zrika. Rav Shimon had learned it from his pasuk. But if we don't accept that limud, then we have a mitzvah saseh, eat from them after the kapara, after the blood has been sprinkled. But the implication of that is don't eat from it before the sprinkling.
Right.
And Rav Gidol Amar Rav is holding, therefore, that is considered a lav. And you can get malchus for such a thing. However, Mosiv Rava, even though it's not explicit, Mosiv Rava, but Rava asked on that. Let me give you a different example. A pasuk says, "V'chol behema mafreses parza." A pasuk says that any behema that has split hooves, v'shas chesas shei process, and that's not only split but it's fully split all the way through. In other words, not like camel, for example, where its hooves are only partially split. Actually, mafreses parza can either mean that it's split or it can mean that it has hooves. Whatever, parza can either mean split or it can mean hooves. V'shas chesas shei process definitely means that it has its hooves that split into two.
Right. If it's split, it has to have a hoof. So something has to be split. What does it mean?
That's the point. In other words, if you have, for example, let's say a camel has hooves, but it's only split part way through. The back of the foot, the back of the foot is together. It's only the front. Front, back, or whatever it is. Yeah, whatever.
Top, not the bottom.
Okay, maybe it's the top, not the bottom. I thought it was the front, not the back.
Front,
whatever it is.
The front is split.
The front is split, right? And maybe only on the top. I don't know. I haven't looked closely at a camel's foot. Whatever. The point remains that it's
not a podiatrist.
No. The point is that it's not split all the way through. Therefore, it doesn't count.
Right.
And the pasuk continues, malaf geda bebehema, where it chews the cud among the animals, so it has to have both simanim, oisa techelu, that you should eat, implying oisa techelu vein behema acheres techelu, which implies only those kinds of animals that have both of those simonim can you eat, implying that if it doesn't have those two simonim, you can't eat it. The ikad ka'amrit. Now, if you're going to tell me that from that essa alone, you can derive a lav, the lav would be that you're not allowed to eat any animal that doesn't have those two simonim. Then why does the pasuk need to continue after that? But the following animals you should not eat. If you already have a lav that comes from the essa, yeah. If you already have a lav that comes from the essa, what do you need another lav?
So that's
shlugda. And by the way, it's interesting as far as this essay about the kosher animals. The Rambam holds that it is actually a mitzvah saseh that when you're going to eat an animal, check for the simon. He holds check for the simonim that you that this that you have a, this that the pasuk is saying that simonim behem and v'chaya. Yeah, the Ravid and pretty much everybody else disagrees with the Rambam on that.
You still have to check.
No, that's before you've checked it. The Ravid and pretty much everybody else disagrees with the Rambam on that. They say that no, you have the reason why we're mentioning over here an esser is because of the technicality. It means that way you have an esser and a lois esser. If you're over and you eat a non-kosher animal, it means that way, for example, it comes into play when it comes to the whole question of esser doche lois esser, that you can't be doche because you have an esser and a lois esser. Not that there's an actual esser over here to actually do something. Okay.
Oh, esser doche lois esser. I checked for the simonim. There were no simonim. I did an essay. So now I don't have...
So we slugged up that explanation.
The point is
you can't say that a lav that you derive from an essay has the force of a lav and you should get malchus for it, because then the Torah has no particular reason to save a lav at all.
Is it the only tower?
No, yes, yeah, it's one example. Rather, you have to say if the Gidol Amar Rav said a statement in this regard, what he said is as follows: not about a koyin that eats mechatas or an asham lifnei zirka, but rather zor shalcha mechatas v'asham lifnei zirka potter. The other way around: if a zor were to eat mechatas or an asham before the blood was sprinkled, potter, he would be potter from malchus. My time. Now, why is that? That we learn from the same pasuk. The amakrova ochlois and ashakupa behem. The pasuk says that they should eat them where the kapara has been accomplished through them, meaning that the blood has been sprinkled.
Right.
Therefore, kol heichad the kohenim beva ochlois and ashakupa behem. Wherever we have what we're saying that the kohenim are supposed to eat them where the kapara has been accomplished, kohenim beva zor lo yechol kikodesh. If zor lo yechol kodesh, then we can also apply to that what the pasuk continues, that a zor should not eat them because they are kodesh, and therefore that will get malchus. But if the first half of the pasuk doesn't apply because the kapara hasn't been accomplished yet, and therefore the kohenim aren't supposed to eat it, then the vizor lo yechol doesn't apply either. Therefore, no malchus.
Because
the blood hasn't been sprinkled, and therefore even the kohen is not allowed to eat it yet. So that's what it is then. So that's the maskana. Therefore, if a gzor were to eat from a chatas or an osham after zrika, he would get malchus, because at that point the kohenim is supposed to be eating it in the zorim or not. If it's before zrika, nobody's supposed to be eating from it. Therefore, the isser of zor hasn't kicked in yet.
And we need
you need the blood to be sprinkled in order for the isser of zoros to kick in on a chatas or an osham.
That we learned that the zor would not be chayav.
Would not be chayav because the two halves of the pasuk go together. When the ochlois and ashakupa behem, when the kohenim are supposed to be eating it after the kapara, then v'zor lo yechol kikodesh shame, and if he does eat it, he gets malchus. When not, then not.
Okay, so what do we conclude from this?
That's what we conclude, therefore, exactly that. That if a zor were to eat it before zrika, he wouldn't get malchus. He would be over on a mitzvah saseh, but he wouldn't be over on a mitzvah
slice. Okay, so it's not, we don't, right.
Yeah.
So do we say that... You can infer lots from the essay?
No, so you can't. And you said you cannot. When the Torah tells us an essay, even if you can derive a lav from the essay, that lav is not considered a real lav. You wouldn't get malchus for it, for example. It has the force of a mitzvah saseh.
Right.
It does not have the force of a lav. The example was by the behemoth. Yeah. Okay. So now we're done with the matter of korbanos. Now we're going to get back to the matter of bikurim. We said in our Mishnah that if you eat from Bikurim before Kriya, before the Pesukim have been said, then you get Malchus, even if you're a Kriyan, and even if it's inside your Shalayim. On the other hand, we mentioned in the Gemara before, we said that the Chachamim say that no, Remember, by Bikurim, you have two different things. There's Hanocha, there's placing them in down in the Azara, and then there's Kriya, there's saying the Psukim.
So first you put down the basket, then you say
the Psukim. Arami over there, yeah. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Parshia, Bikurim Hanocha Ma'akeves Behen, Kriya Ein Ma'akeves Behen. That when it comes to the Bikurim, not like Rabbi Shimon, the placing them in the Azara is ma'akev. If you didn't place them in the Azara yet, then the Kohen is not allowed to eat them, and if he did, he would get malchus. But the Kriya is not ma'akev, even if you didn't say the Psukim, that doesn't prevent it from being valid Bikurim. And the Kohen can still eat.
It's
the Hanocha, not the Kriya. And we said at the beginning of the Gemara, Rashi had brought the reason why, is because Hanocha is repeated twice in the Psukim, and we have a rule with Korbanos that anything that's repeated twice is la'akev. It must be done for it to be kosher. As opposed to the Kriya, it only says once.
Okay.
Question is, did Rabbi Elazar really say that? We have another din that Rabbi Elazar said also in the name of Rabbi Hoshia, that Hifush Bikurim Kodim Lachag. Now, we have like this. Bikurim can't be brought before Shavuos. You have two different periods of time during which Bikurim can be brought. They can be brought from Shavuos until Chanukah. Because before Shavuos is not yet the time of Bikurim, and after Hanukkah already it's not really the time, it's too late. But within that, there's two different times, namely, only if you bring the Bikurim before Sukkot can you say the Psukim. Because it has to be, the pasuk continues afterwards, that you bring the Bikurim, the Samach of a Chol HaTov, and you're happy with all the goodness that Hashem gave you. That only applies until Sukkot, which is Mansum Hoseinu. If you bring your Bikurim from after Sukkot until Hanukkah, you are still allowed to bring them, but you don't say the Psukim.
And they're still valid.
They're still valid, but you don't say the Psukim. But let's say a case.
Reb
Shimon and Reb Shimon would say the same thing. Reb Shimon and Reb Hashanah would say the same thing. But anyway, so Reb Elazar said in the name of Reb Hoshea, Hifush Bikurim Kodim L'chag, if you designated your Bikurim before Sukkot, where at that point, had you brought them to the Beis Mikdash, at that point, you would have had the Mitzvah of Kriya, you would have had to say the Psukim. But over Alein Achag, and instead you didn't bring them Sukkot time, took us past and you didn't yet bring them, you're kavu. You have to leave them to rot. You can't bring them as Bikurim anymore. Now, why not? My lav nishim delay mustel mikra alein. L'chora, the reason is because now you're not able to say the Psukim anymore. The isak that kriya in ma'akevus behen. Now, if you're telling me, as Rabbi Elazar's first statement was, that you don't need the kriya anyway for them to be kosher to Bikurim, am I your kavu? Why do you have to leave them to rot? Bring them and don't say and don't do the kriya and they're still kosher to Bikurim. The reason is Kidr Abzeira. The reason is based on what Reb Zeira said, a famous expression that Reb Zeira mentioned, which is mentioned in many places in Shas. The Amar Reb Zeira, Kolad Roy Labila Ein Bila Ma'akevus. So anything that could be mixed, the mixing is not ma'akev. V'cholsha Ein Roy Labila Bila Ma'akevus. But if it's not suitable to be mixed, then the mixing is ma'akev. The context where Reb Zeira said this is as follows. The Mishnah tells us in Menachos the largest size mincha that you're allowed to bring in one container is 60 isarin. A typical mincha is one isarin, and an isarin is a shiur challah. So depending who you ask, a shiur challah is anywhere between about 3 and 5 pounds of flour. So what? 43.2 eggs. So you could bring a mincha of one isarin, two isarin, etc. The maximum you can bring in one keli is 60 isarin. And the Gemara discusses over there in Menachos. Now, why is that? The reason is because only a mincha is not just flour. A mincha is flour and oil. You have to mix the flour and the oil. Up to 60 isarin, you're going to be able to mix it. Beyond 60 isarin, you're not going to be able to. It's going to be too big. So the Gemara asks over there, well, so what? The din is, even if you brought a korban mincha and you didn't mix the flour and oil, it's still kosher. So who cares? You bring a mincha of 61, 70, whatever it is, and so on, who cares? You can't mix it. It doesn't have to be mixed to be kosher. And there, Reb Zeira says its famous rule like this. If it was something that could have been mixed, you just didn't bother with it, it'll still be kosher. Because in theory, you could mix it if you want to. But if it's not even capable of being mixed, then it is possible. Same logic over here. If you have Bikurim where you could have said the Psukim and you, for whatever reason, didn't, fine, they're still kosher. Kriya is not ma'akev. But like this, where you were not able to bring, where you're not able to do the Kriya anymore, and however these Bikurim were designated when Kriya was still possible, and now it's already a time when it's not possible, then Bila ma'akev, then the Kriya is going to be ma'akev. So there's no contradiction between Rebbe Elazar's two states. So then, okay. Rab Achaba Yaakov Masnila Kidrab Asi Omar Rab Yechanan. Now, this statement that we said from Rab Loza Omar Rab Hoshia, that Bikurim, the Hanocha is Ma'akav, the Kriya is not, that was one version of it. Rab Achaba Yaakov learned it Kidrab Asi Alibad Rab Yechanan, Kidrab Asi Omar Rab Yechanan. He learned it that it was a statement that Rab Ashi had said in the name of Rab Yechanan, Bekashalay Rab Yechanan Al Rab Yechanan, which brought him to a contradiction between two statements of Rab Yechanan. Namely, Umi Omer Rav Yechanan, Bikurim Hanocha Ma'akevet Behen, Kriya Ein Ma'akevet Behen. You're telling me that Bikurim, only the Hanocha is Ma'akev, the Kriya is not. I can find you a different statement of Rav Yechanan, which says differently. Namely,
Where, one second.
Rav Asi one time asked Rav Yechanan, at what point did Bikurim become mutter for the Kriyanim to eat? And he said, if they're roi l'kriya, if they're being brought between Shavuot and Sukkot, and by the way, which is the time when it's roi l'kriya. And by the way, we'll learn tomorrow. Also, there are other criteria that Bikurim need in order to be roi l'kriya as well. But we're not getting into it now. So if they're roi l'kriya mishkar alein, only when you say the psukim is the kohen allowed to eat them. V'she'en ru'in l'kriya, if they're not roi for kriya, for example, you brought them after Sukkot, n'shiyiru p'nei abayin, they become mutter for the kohen to eat once they see the face of the Beis Mikdash, meaning as soon as they're brought into the Azara, even before they're put down on the ground. So, kasha kriya kriya, kasha hanocha hanocha. So exactly, if we say that Rav Asi in the name of Rabbi Yechanan said that the hanocha is necessary, the kriya is not, well then we have a double contradiction. Kasha hanocha hanocha, we have a contradiction about the two things you have to put it down. The first statement of Rabbi Yechanan says you do, the second one says you don't, as soon as draw up nabais, and kasha kriya kriya. And you have a problem between the two statements about kriya. The first statement he's saying you never need kriya for it to be valid. The second one he's saying that if it's something that needs kriya, then you need to do the kriya before it's valid. So you have a double contradiction.
Kriya and hanocha.
Kriya, like Kasha, the answer is like this. The two statements about Kriya are not a contradiction because of Harab Shimon and Harabanan. One statement is according to Rab Shimon, the other one is according to the Rabbanan. Rab Yechanan's second statement, that Haru'uyin l'kriya mishakara alayin, is according to Rab Shimon of our Mishnah, who said that you need Kriya and otherwise you get Malchus for eating Bikurim. The first statement that he said, that Kriya is not Makkah, that's according to the Chachamim, which is the Halacha. And Hanocha, Hanocha, Nami, Lakasha. And the two things about putting it down is also not a contradiction. Because, Harab Yehuda, Vaharabana. Because one is according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the other one is according to the Rabbana.
So he said it in the name of...
So one he's saying in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, and the other he's saying in the name of the Rabbana.
Okay.
Namely like this. Yitanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, when the Pasuk says, V'hinachtoi, when the Pasuk says, you should place it down, Zutnufa. This refers to the waving, which means, in other words, Rashi says like this: the word behinachtoi, on the face of it, means you should put it down.
Implying that if you don't, it's not.
But Rabbi Yehuda understands that instead of reading it meloshen hanocha, you can also read it meloshen nocha, which means to lead from one place to another, like v'leinocha malikim.
That means tanufa.
So therefore, it means tanufa. It means the waving, which you wave it in all directions. So the v'hinachti means the waving. So Rabbi Yehuda, Miloshin nocha. You have, in other words, there's noch, which means to rest, and there's nocha, which means to lead. V'loi nocha malakim derech eretz plishtim, for example, that Hashem did not lead the Jewish people through the land. So therefore, how do you lead Bikurim? You wave. So he says v'hinachti is the tnufa. The word v'hinachti refers to the waving. Rabbi Yehuda. So you're saying it means waving. Maybe it means actually putting it down on the ground. No, sure. Later on, a couple of psukim earlier, it says that you should put it down. That actually refers to putting it down. So what does v'hinachtoi a few psukim later mean? It means tnufa. So therefore, nothing is repeated. Again, only if something is repeated does it mean it's ma'akev. Rabbi Yehuda holds nothing is repeated because one
well, we said
because first it said, first we said that first we said according to the Chachamim vehinachtoi referred to putting it down. Therefore, it's repeated. Therefore, it's ma'akir. Rabbi Yehuda would say one refers to putting it down, one refers to waiting. No repeat. Therefore, no. Therefore, it's not ma'akir.
And not gonna is like two ways. One is
yeah.
One is
snooper. One, yeah, exactly. And by the way, Tosfos points out, so according to the Shimon, where do we get that kriya is ma'akiv? It's not repeated twice. So Tosfos says that actually
we said according to the Shimon, it is ma'akiv. Right.
So Tosfos says actually that the answer is that Rav Shimon would say it's true. If we only had the Sukkim and Kisavo, we wouldn't say that Kriya is massive. But because we have the pasuk before, like Socha Lecha B'Sharecha, the long pasuk that Rav Shimon darshin, that gives us a separate limud to say that the Kriya is massive.
So one says, what's the true Sukkim?
So you have one pasuk that says Va'nisa Va'marta, that says you should lift up your voice and say as follows, Arami Ovidavi, but it doesn't repeat anything about saying it. So therefore, if it weren't for that, if you just had that, it wouldn't be ma'akiv. That's why the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda say that kriya is not ma'akiv. Rabbi Shimon, who holds it is, says not on the basis of the Sukkim over here, but on the basis of Le'Silcha Lecha B'Sharecha, the pasuk that he darshan earlier. There's a different explanation that some of the Rishonim say that Va'anisa Va'amauta can count as a double expression, because Va'anisa means you should answer and Va'amauta means you should say. So Rabbi Shimon might understand that that's a double expression of saying. Okay. Anyway. So therefore, again, Rabbi Yehuda holds that Hanacha is not ma'akiv. Therefore, that's what when Rabbi Yochanan had said that Mishiro Pnei Abayis, as soon as the Bikurim are brought into the Azara, they're mutter to the Kohenim, that would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, none of the other things, once you bring it in, none of the other parts of it, putting it down, saying the Pesukim, or waving it, are ma'akiv. Whereas according to the Chachamim, against Rabbi Yehuda, the putting down is ma'akiv. That was the first statement of Rabbi Yochanan, that if you don't put them down, then and a Kohen eats them, he gets ma'akiv. Uman Tana's polygalid Rabbi Yehuda. So now we have to ask which Tana is it that argues with Rabbi Yehuda and says that Davka that it has to have Hanacha, it has to actually be put down on the ground. That is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. That is specifically Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov agrees that you have to wave the Bikurim, but he learns it from a different pasuk. The Tanya, the Lokach HaKohen Atenim Yadecha, when the pasuk says the Kohen should take the basket from your hand, limit ala bikurim should turn into snufa, given Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, from here we learn that the bikurim need to be waved. My time is the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The lochach kohen, atenim yadecha, the kohen should take the basket from your hand. Where do we see that? My time is the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Because after yad yad mishlomim, he says, you can learn by exeter shava from the word yad in connection with shlomim. Here it says the Kohen should take the basket from your hand. Right. By Shlomim it says Yodav to be Enet Ishe Hashem. It says his hands shall bring what is to be offered on the fire to Hashem, where it means waving. You put the chaz of a shorik together with the tailor on his hand. Yodav over there goes on the owner, but Makan Kohen Aflahalan Kohen. Therefore, just like over here when it says Veloka HaKohen, means the Kohen takes it. Therefore, Aflahalan Kohen. Therefore, also by the Shlomim, it means the Kohen has to be holding it. Malahalan Bailam Afkan Bailam. On the other hand, by the Shlomim, Yodav Tiviana refers to the owner of the Korban. Therefore, by the Gzeit of Shava, it must mean the owner is also waving the Bikurim over here. Okay, so what does it mean? Maniach Kohen, Yodav Tachas Yidei Bailim, means the Kohen places his hand under the hands of the Bailim, Umeinith, and waves it. Which means, by the way, that
he moves the hand of the Bailim.
What it actually means is. No, what it actually means is the Kohen holds the bottom of the basket. The owner either holds the top of the basket, or the Rambam actually puts it that the owner holds the basket with his mouth, and then I guess in order to put his hands properly on it. And then the Kohen is holding from the bottom, and the owner is holding from up here.
And the Kohen moves?
And they both move it together now. They both move it together in all directions, like a little of an X-ray. Mm-hmm. It can't be, by the way, it can't be that we mean that the Kohen puts his hands, and then the owner puts his hands on top of his, and the basket is on top of all that, because then the Kohen's hands wouldn't be touching the basket. There'd be a chitzit. So it has to mean like that. So the owner's hands are here, and the Kohen puts it on the basket, and the Bala puts it on the side, and the Kohen puts it on the bottom. Yeah.
So they're both lifting it,
and they're both waving it. Yeah. Okay.
He lifts it a little bit because it's
right.
Not lifted like this.
Okay. more about Bikurim. Omer Rav Ba'ada Omer Rav Yitzchak. Bikurim me'emesai mechayvin aleihem. At what point does... Now, up until now, we were talking about what point a Kohen is allowed to eat Bikurim. Now we got to ask a different question. At what point does a Zer become chayv mitzvah b'dei shemayim for eating Bikurim? The answer is chayv mitzvah b'dei shemayim. Mishiyiru pnei abayis. That is when they see the face of the Bais Mikdash. In other words, once they're brought into the Azar. So given that, by the way, given that the halacha is that actually they do need to be put down on the ground, and only then are they mutter to kohen, it means therefore you have as follows. Till they're brought into the Bais Mikdash, they have no kedusha yet. Anybody could eat them. Once they're brought into the Bais Mikdash, nobody's allowed to eat them. A zor would be chayv mitzvah, a kohen would be chayv malchus. After you do hanocha, then the kohen's allowed to eat them, and a zor would be chayv mitzvah b'dei shemayim or malchus.
How do you do
hanocha?
Just take them.
You
down.
Put it down on the floor. Yeah.
What do you mean? If he's away at 200 yards, you can see the
Azara. No, Europe nearby things that come into the Azara, and therefore now they're coming to the Azara.
The
Quran. Yeah, when the Bikurim are brought into the Azara. Keman ki hai Tana. So who is Rav Ba'ada going according to? He's going according to the following Tana. The Tanya, Rav Eliezer. Bikurim miktasim b'chotim miktasim b'fnim. Suppose you have a basket of Bikurim where some of them are inside the Azara and some of them are outside.
At the limit of the
shop. You're standing by the doorway over there. You have a big basket. Half of it is inside the doorway. Half of it is outside. Shabachot harein kecholim b'chol devrem. The ones that are still outside are considered cholin for all purposes. Azara would be allowed to eat it. The ones that are inside the Azara are like hektish for all purposes, and therefore, again, if Azara ate them, he'd be chayiv mista as would be true with any carbon.